Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.
No, thanks for having us.
Hey, we haven't started yet. So.
Yeah.
This is Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of Bourbon, bringing you the best in bourbon news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. And I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman. Rye whiskey production had a historic past in the northeastern states, especially Pennsylvania and Maryland. And now, Sagamore Spirit, based in Baltimore, is bringing rye whiskey back. Ryan and I traveled to record this interview with their CEO, Brian Tracy, and their director of operations, Ryan Norwood. We uncover a bit about Brian's unique past, of how a phone call with Kevin Plank, who's the CEO of Under Armour, would take him from running a backpacking and kayaking company in Flagstaff, Arizona, to building a new distillery from the ground up. And one of Brian's tasks was to find a distiller that led to a few conversations with, of course, our other guest, Ryan Norwood, a young guy who was really into yeast and beers at the time. In Sagamore, they have a long-standing relationship with MGP and a quite connection with one of the greats in distilling, Larry Ebersole. But now they have their own Maryland rye distillate, and we talk about how they shaped and revitalized the Maryland rye category. With that, enjoy today's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Andrew Walcott, who writes me on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. He says, several months back, I bought my first bottle of very old Barton 100 proof. There's a sweet middle palate note, I know, and a note on a personal connection I can't place. But halfway through my work week, it randomly popped into my head, has there ever been a note that hit like an earthworm and wouldn't leave you alone until you connected with it again, until you found the appropriate memory? As a matter of fact, yes, absolutely, Andrew. And that is one of the beautiful things about whiskey and your discovering your own palate. See, the thing about discovering your palate is my palate's going to be different than yours. Andrew's palate's going to be different than Mitch's. Mitch's palate's going to be different than Kenny's, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are all unique individuals, and our palate is a representation of our life because what we can detect on our palate are things that we have had previously. You know, so that's why I am able to pick up a particular oyster shell note from the south of France, because I had like a particular south of France oyster that is very prominent in my memory. And when I taste it, especially like in champagne, I can call that out very easily. Same with marzipan, same with like cornbread, things like that. Notes that you hear me say a lot, because I have a personal connection to those notes and they come to me easily. Notes that are a little bit more difficult for me to come by are some of the rarer spices, like a Chinese allspice or a rare pepper. And sometimes you get like a heat from the bourbon. You're like, is that a Carolina Reaper? And you like go in to taste a Carolina Reaper and you're like, nope, not a Carolina Reaper. And by the way, my tongue is now on fire because I just had a Carolina Reaper. But, you know, my whole point is your palate is connected to your brain, obviously. And sometimes it takes us a little while to figure out what that trigger point is on our palate. And when it hits you, sometimes it's in the middle of the night. You're like, oh my gosh, yes, that's it. That's it. And it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool moment. Now, there is a whiskey that I still have not been able to identify this really unique spice in it. And I keep trying to find it and I keep approaching the whiskey and it evades me. And that's the New Riff Malted Rye. The New Riff Malted Rye made my top 100 whiskeys of the year. I actually did very well in that. And I just love that whiskey so much, but I cannot friggin' figure out what this note is. And I tasted it last year in 2021 and it's been bugging me ever since. So I'm probably through my second bottle trying to figure out what the hell that damn note is. But that's a great, great question coming in from Andrew. That's going to do it for this week's Above the Char. If you want to be like Andrew, make sure you hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. Click the contact button and send me your question. If I like it, I'll read it on the air and do my best to answer it. But that's going to do it for this week, folks. Be safe out there. Until next week, cheers.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixir's Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at WhiskeyAmbitions.com.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 000273.
It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button. Welcome, everybody, to Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan on the road today, taking all the equipment up to Baltimore to come and visit one of our newest distilling partners that we're working with. But man alive, we got to go through the warehouse today, taste some fantastic whiskey, and it hasn't made me even more excited to be able to sit down and be able to talk to these guys about it.
Yeah, we're walking in. It was funny. We're walking in. Brian's like, I'm sure you've been to many distilleries and ours is no different. I'm like, but we have never been to a Maryland distillery. So, I'm super excited about today. Simple flight for us to come here to Baltimore. Sagamore, you know, who we're spending the day with, has been a fantastic partner to work with. We're super excited to be partnered with them for our Pursuit Rye. So yeah, we came up and decided to visit them, instead of them shipping samples to us. We actually got the DeWalt out and tapped into some barrels, and gosh, they got some fantastic product coming down the line. So super excited for everyone to get to know them and see what they're going to have coming down in the future.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think not only that, I mean, we got to hear more about the history of Sagamore. We got to learn more about the history of Baltimore and Maryland, Ryan. I think that's kind of what made us so excited to be actually starting this partnership as well, is that there's a huge history and lineage between Maryland and Rye, and as well as Kentucky, and us kind of bringing that handshake together. But really, this is going to be focused more on Sagamore and really being able to give them more of a showcase, because I feel like this is one of the best, if not the one of better, or not one of the best rye whiskeys that we've been able to try on the market in the past few years that we've just been absolutely blown away with.
Yeah. I mean, we've been spending the day here. Gosh, we've been here, I don't know, 8 hours, maybe 6-7 hours. I wish we had a boom mic following us all day, just getting all the stories and all that. And now we get down, sit down to record. Hopefully all the stories we can remember out. All, and I'll be like, what'd you say?
Yeah. Like that one time that, you know, you had a pipe go into a corn bushel or something like that. Yeah. Who knows if we'll get back to that story, but I mean, they've had, like I said, we'll get into it. You know, they've had a great lineage. They've got some pretty recognizable funding that kind of came behind it. And so I think those are things that we're all going to kind of touch on and definitely talk about. And
why is it rye only?
Yeah, and why is it rye only? We'll talk about Larry and the touch of like MGP and kind of how they're shifting off of MGP. I think there's a lot of good things to touch on this one.
We can fill 45 minutes.
Let's do it. So today on the show, we have Brian Tracy. He is the CEO of Sagamore Spirit, as well as Ryan Norwood, the director of operations. So fellas, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
So you heard Brian first and then you heard Ryan second there. So kind of before we get into this, you know, Ryan, we're going to come to you here in a few minutes, because you bring the science and really the brewing knowledge and some other things. But Brian has a pretty fascinating tale about how he got to this point. But I want to kind of talk about that because we were in the car earlier
And you were saying that you kind of bummed around in Tahoe for a few years and tried to kind of make your way. So kind of give us a little bit of background.
Yeah, definitely one of the more unique paths to becoming a CEO of a distillery.
CEO of a massive, you know, operation here. So kind of tell us your story a little bit.
It is different. And I could see the look on your faces today. It did catch you off guard a little bit. And so I think a lot of times people say, you know, you must be from the industry. Where did you work before? Was it Makers or whatever the case may be? And I think people are often caught off guard when I say, you know, I'm not from the industry originally. And, you know, as a matter of fact, you know, I think you said, Ryan, earlier is like, what else have you been the CEO of? And I said, nothing. and so
I didn't mean that in an insulting way. I was just asking questions.
Yeah. And it looked like you're like, why don't you pull over now? We're going to head back to Louisville.
Yeah. He's going to kick us out in Baltimore.
No. But I did a little bit different. So, you know, when I graduated high school, I moved out west. I didn't start college right away. It wasn't really something for me at the time. And moved out west and I lived in Lake Tahoe and Breckenridge and Telluride and Steamboat and bounced around for a little while and did a little skiing and then eventually settled down in Flagstaff, Arizona, where I lived for 19 years. And I did go to college at that point. And when I got out of college, I decided to go get a job at accounting for Spider Ski Clothing up in Boulder, Colorado, because I was like, I'm a college graduate now. It's time to grow up and go do the right thing. And I went up and did that for a few months. And I was like,
Spider is a pretty big name, especially you're going to the skiing side. I mean, that must have been a pretty big thing. Like you're a ski bum and you get a job with Spider. I'd be like, this is amazing. It's like Spider and North Face and Patagonia. Like those are the three big names that come to my mind.
It's a great company, really good people. But I realized I was like, I'm not so sure I want to be at a desk all the time. So I'd been spending so much time outside. And so at that point, I used that opportunity. I'd written a business plan in college about starting a tour company. And so moved back to Flagstaff and actually started a tour company and ran a backpacking and kayaking company in the Grand Canyon and Yosemite and all throughout the Southwest for about 15 years. And also owned a outdoor retail shop with a partner of mine and a ski rental shop and so forth. So I did that. And so I really kind of got brought into it for the entrepreneurial side, like, you know, taking a vision, taking a concept and bringing it to life, if you will. Certainly not for my skill set in distilling or anything along those lines by any means. So I quickly ran out and found two amazing people to work alongside with. And one was Larry Ebersold and the second one was this guy, Ryan Norwood. So.
Well, I want to kind of rewind a little bit because I think you kind of passed over a few hurdles here, a few big monumental things. Because Kevin Plank, he's like one of the founders of Under Armour. How did you two cross paths and he reach out to you and tap you to be CEO? Like, how did that all come about?
Yeah, so I went to high school with Kevin Plank. And so I knew him from back then. And then we have another investor as well, Bill McDermott. And I actually went to middle school with him. And so I'd been talking to Kevin, you know.
It's all about who you know.
It is a little. Life is a little bit about who you know. I'm not going to lie. And this industry isn't too different in some ways, too. Yeah. You know, and we'd been talking a little bit back and forth. But, you know, maybe come work at Under Armour. And I said, I don't know. But if you ever had something like that was really interesting and really unique and something different, I would be open to hearing what that was. And Kevin and Bill had been talking about a distillery. This is 2010. They've been talking about doing a distillery for a little while, maybe 2011. And I thought they would never do that. You know, they have real jobs. And then one day I got a phone call early February, like late February, early in the morning. And it was a 410 number. And I'm like, I only know one guy, 410, that's Baltimore. But he wouldn't be calling me. And sure enough, it's him. And he's like, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to do this distillery thing. And I was like, well, that's great. Congrats. You know, you should go do that. That's going to be awesome. He's like, no.
Hey, why are you calling me?
Yeah. He's like, no. When I say we're doing it, like you're doing it. And he's like, so why don't you sell your businesses and move back east and help us get this thing off the ground? And at that point I said, well, I should probably learn a little bit more about really this business before I fully commit, but I'm certainly interested.
Yeah, what did you even know about distilling business?
Nothing at all. And so I was like, yeah, well, why don't I fly back? This is the end of February, as I said, and I had a friend getting married St. Patrick's Day. So I was like, I'll be back, you know, March 15th. And he's like, no, I'll see you Friday. And so I was like, all right, I'll see you Friday. And I should have learned this guy likes to move pretty fast. And flew back and I had no idea, even growing up in Maryland, that we had that kind of history of distilling here. And they kind of shared for me this vision of the history that we had here and the fact that this brand, this identity of Maryland-style rye could live on for decades without actually anybody in Maryland actually doing it. You know, there's some brands outside of Maryland, obviously Heaven Hill Pikesville Rye and Leopold Brothers and a few others, which was great. And it just spoke volumes about how well-respected it was that somebody could... These other brands were doing it, but no one in Maryland was doing it. And we just saw that as a really unique opportunity, a really unique space. And so I just thought it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I couldn't resist and absolutely went back. And I was like, now I got to sell it to the wife and kids. And luckily they were very supportive. And, you know, I sold my business to the first guy, one of the first people I ever hired, and he's still running strong with it, which is really cool.
What business was it, by the way?
It's called Four Season Guides, based in Flagstaff, Arizona. So if you want to go see the bottom of the Grand Canyon or top of Half Dome or anything, give them a call. and then, yeah, we moved back and it was, it's been an amazing experience, you know, taking concept from, we don't have a product, so what's that product going to be, to we didn't have a bottle, to we didn't have a distillery, we didn't have anything, go to market strategy or anything along those lines.
Yep.
But you know, first thing you do is just surround yourself with really smart people.
So what did Kevin like about the distilling business that he was like, all right, this is something I want to go down? I know you said about the history, but what else was there that he was like, all right, this is something I want to add to my portfolio or just, you know, go down this venture?
You know, he's an entrepreneur by heart and loves Maryland and loves the city of Baltimore. You know, when Under Armour started becoming something, he had a lot of people say, well, it's time for you to move. You got to relocate Under Armour to Portland. And he's like, why? I love Maryland. I love Baltimore. You know, and it's kind of like this really nice, like this great, like blue collar town. And, you know, it's just like, I love that. I don't need to relocate. And I think, you know, the idea of another great industry coming to our city and just giving people one more reason to come visit this great city and learn about all the wonderful things that go on here was really kind of what motivated him. And he loves manufacturing, loves job creation, and just loves just kind of that entrepreneurial spirit.
What was that like initial vision that like he was speaking to you and you were like, okay, this is something I want to go. Like what was that?
It's a little different than where we are today. It was
yeah, originally, this looks like it was very well thought out.
Yeah. We sat on it for a while. We were originally going to be a 500 gallon pot still. And as you saw today, we're a 24 inch column still with a 96500 gallon fermenter. So it evolved a little bit, but you know, that's okay. That's what businesses do. And especially these businesses, they take a long time to kind of bring to light and get off the ground. And, you know, we really kind of thought long and hard about like, we want to create, you know, build off the legacy here in Maryland. And to do that, we got to put a stake in the ground. And this distillery kind of does that for us.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the one of the things that I think about moving into this business compared to your last business, I remember you talking about, there's probably a little bit less amount of casualties that you had said that you have to deal with in this business.
Yeah. You know, I love what I did before, but, and I look at what we did before with guiding as not that different than the business I'm in today. And the fact that it's really about hospitality and creating an experience for someone. So whether we create an experience for you in the backcountry of the Grand Canyon, can we create you an experience here on our campus here in Baltimore, or an experience in a glass that you remember and something positive that you do with friends. And a lot of that was, you know, what we provided for folks in the backcountry of the Grand Canyon or Yosemite. However, there was definitely inherent risks. You were completely exposed to the elements. It wasn't a very controlled environment. And was one of the few guide services that didn't have some catastrophic injuries.
Like you get up, the whiteboard. It says like race at 0 days back to deaths on the trail today.
we have a very good record, and I was like, I'm getting out of this while I'm ahead.
Yeah. All right. So he's convinced you. You're like, all right, I'm in. Who's the first call you make when you're going down this path of starting a distillery?
Well, I got handed off this pile. I came in and I got handed off this pile of paper that was just, you know, folder after folder after folder, because Bill had been doing research for about a year. He's like, here you go. And he's like, and here's a bunch of numbers. Start calling, introduce yourself to this guy and this guy and this guy. I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, hey, I'm Brian. Like, you know, like I was
Brian
told
from
to
Baltimore. Yeah, I got here from Arizona.
I used to do canoe trips.
I was told to Oregon.
Now we're sitting here making whiskey.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll never forget. This was the summer of July of 2013. And there was like, the guys at Vendome are like, yeah, you want to talk to this guy, Larry Ebersold. And so I flew down to Kentucky and met him at the Jim Beam distillery. And then he and I spent the day touring different distilleries that day. And he's an amazing person, an amazing individual, and has, I haven't met a lot of people, but a tremendous amount of knowledge. And I call him the godfather of rye whiskey. He's distilled more rye whiskey, I think, than probably most people in this world, if not everyone in this world for the most part. And, but I don't know if he was trying to test me that day, which I kind of think, knowing Larry, there was some testing going on there. And I remember him on the backcountry roads of Kentucky, passing in some solid double yellow lines around windy turns. And like me just kind of was like,
white knuckling it.
I did some fun things in the Grand Canyon, but like this is cool. Like
grabbing those little shit handles.
Kind of just saying, like, if you're gonna get in this business, you better be ready to buckle up and go for a hell of a ride, kind of thing. And I think that was the first test, and I guess I passed. And I was like, so got back to the Jim Beam Distillery. I was like, well, do you want to work with us? You know, and luckily he said yes, and he was on the project. I mean, he's still part of the project today. We're really, really lucky, and you know, we'll send samples to him. And he was an incredibly important part of getting this distillery operational and our product where we are today. And I can't thank him enough for everything he did for us. And so we're very fortunate. But, you know, this from concept to actually operational is over 3 years. I mean, it takes forever to get these things off the ground, and they don't come with instructions. So you need a Larry, you know?
You need a Larry. You gotta get on the waiting list for Vendome.
Yeah, there's no like franchise blueprint, you know, that you can, here's a distillery, you know, here you go, just plug and play.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a tough one. So let's go ahead and kind of shift a little bit. We'll come back over to the kind of like ground up building, because at what point did you call on Ryan? How did Ryan start coming to the picture here?
When was your first date?
Yeah, it was a good one. It was in Louisville. I feel like Louisville is the center for even us, you know, to get this business off the ground. So it was kind of
whiskey
funny.
Matchmaking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, you go around, you're like, it's just like, I'm like, all right, you know, we got to go hire someone. And someone told me in the beginning, the first thing you need to do is hire a master distiller. And come to find out that wasn't probably the right move. And luckily that didn't really happen for us. And we needed somebody who just really understood process engineering and the whole process of whiskey making itself. And so that's where Larry was great. And we tried to hire people out of Kentucky. And it's one of these things like, we got this great concept. We need you to move. And then like, we need you to move to Baltimore, and then click. Kind of like, you know, they just hang up on you, and you don't have a distillery up out of the ground yet. You're just showing them blupprints. So no one's interested in that. And
Ron, look at Ryan, like he's such a sucker.
He is. And then, Bill McDermott, as I mentioned, one of the investors, is like, I got this brother-in-law who looks at yeast strains all day long for this brewery out in Colorado. Should we give him a call? I was like, yes, we should. And
he'll talk to us.
Yeah. And I was like, absolutely. I was like, I want to meet. And so I'm going to Louisville for something. I was like, contact Ryan. I was like, why don't you fly to Louisville? And we got talking on the phone, and we had a lot of similar tastes in music. And one of our particular favorite brands was playing at the Louisville Palace Theater that night. And I was like, well, let's go get some drinks and let's go see some music. And pretty much
playing
Widespread Panic.
Oh, nice.
And
jam band fans. Yeah.
Yeah, man. And we walked out and we're like, same music, same attitude. I think this works. Now I just got to figure out how to get the guy to move from Colorado.
I don't know if you know yeast, but you like Widespread Panic. You like Panic, you're in.
Yeah. The other stuff we'll figure out, you know? And I don't know. You tell the story, but I don't know. It's just, you just have a great attitude, great knowledge, and is actually a really great leader too, and for the team as well. And just very humble, but one of the greatest people you'll ever meet.
Well, that's quite the introduction, right? To start leading off.
I'm handing this off. Yeah, like,
your turn, Ryan.
Yeah, so I mean, he makes that day sound a little bit easier than what it was from my standpoint, at least. But no, I went to school for microbiology. Wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. Doing that, I kind of thought medicine at one point, maybe pharmaceuticals. And then I think it was my junior year in college, I got this email about an internship you've all been waiting for. And it was an internship at New Belgium Brewing Company in Fort Collins, Colorado, which I was going to Colorado State in Fort Collins.
Because anybody out of college, you're like, work in beer? Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it was like I instantly became like the best friend of everybody. I applied for that internship. I got it. It was supposed to be a 6-month internship, and I spent 10 years there and kind of worked my way up and was helping to manage yeast and fermentations there. And Bill was constantly talking about starting this distillery, and you know, he'd send me water samples. I think I can't tell you how many times I explained the process of fermentation to him and yeast, and he'd call me up and go, "What'd you say about yeast the other day?" And I'm like, "What is he really going to do this?" And at the time, like Brian said, he was talking about a 500-gallon pot still, and I'm like, oh, you'll be able to do this. You can handle this. You know, I did a little bit of distilling in the backyard at home. And so I had a good understanding of a lot of that stuff. And then it wasn't until Brian actually called me and he and I sat and chatted probably for an hour the first time he called. And he didn't ask me one question about fermentation, one question about yeast. It was more so like, who are you? You know, where are you from? What makes you who you are? We chatted a lot. We had a lot of things in common. And then that's when we set up this Kentucky trip. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into and flew to Kentucky. And all of a sudden, I'm meeting Larry for the first time and Jim Moorhead as well. And I remember, I think we spent about 8 hours touring around distilleries while they peppered me with questions. And Larry's the type of person that he'll ask you a question, and whether you're right or wrong, he just stares at you.
Just so you feel like you're wrong?
Oh, every time. And he's like, are you sure about that? Are you sure about that? And, you know, I think I was wearing a denim shirt and I was sweating through this denim shirt and like spent the entire day, and I got done and I was like, pretty sure I answered every one of his questions wrong. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm going to go back and like lick my wounds. And then that's when he looked at me and he goes, we're going to this panic show. And I think at that point he kind of said like, you know, all things aside, like, I think you'd be great for this company. I'm going to offer you a job. Let's not think about that stuff right now. Let's go enjoy ourselves and have a whiskey. And I remember we had a whiskey at the bar and then walked down and went to the show. And that to me was like what would pull me away from Colorado. I really enjoyed what I was doing. I Colorado's a great state, but at the same time, it was like I was kind of itching for something new and to kind of take that next step and challenge myself. And Sagamore was a great spot for me to be able to do that.
So for those that don't know, walk us through like what's the difference of being a brewer versus a distiller.
And before we get to there, just to make sure our listeners know who Larry Ebersold is, if you've never heard of him, he is also considered one of the greats in American whiskey distilling. I think he was a previous master distiller at MGP, which is what Seagram's and stuff like that. So he's got a lot of clout in the whiskey world. So
yes,
we're name dropping over here just to make sure everybody that understands where this name comes from.
Yeah, thank you for clearing
that. Yeah. Master distiller at MGP LDI, 25 years, and Pernod Ricard. And I think, you know, he's at a few other distilleries as well. And
he's had his hand in so many.
Yeah.
You can probably count them all.
Yeah. And he's incredibly, he definitely runs a tough interview, which is fine. I just got to sit on the sides like, that's great. Good go.
Just waiting for this panic show to start.
I feel so lucky to have met him and worked closely with him and have had him on this project. It's been incredible. And then, you know, I think getting Ryan here, I think we all know this is kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity here at Sagamore too, you know, here in Maryland, and get Maryland back on the map in its rightful place in distilling. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyway, back to what you were wanting to say, Ryan.
Yeah. So what is the difference of being a brewer to a distiller? What is the difference there?
You know, I mean, aside from a lot of nuanced differences, it's very similar. You know, from a distilling standpoint, everything's done on grain, where brewing, you remove the grain. But the first 75% of distilling is brewing. You're making a distiller's beer. You're trying to take this grain, extract sugar out of it, and then put yeast on it to make alcohol and CO2. And so that process was very similar. You know, there's some small changes within fermentation process and the cleanliness of it that I've struggled to wrap my head around from a distilling side, just knowing that like you're going to just remove that alcohol and you're not looking for a lot of those other flavors. But the biggest challenge for me and the hardest thing for me is has to be the patience you have to have in distilling whiskey. Is like, you know, when you make a beer, 2 weeks later you have that finished product and you're tasting it and you're out there and you're receiving feedback, where when you're making whiskey, from our standpoint, you're waiting 4 years and you're just hoping that it's getting better and heading in that right direction. But that's been a bit of a challenge for me to like really practice my patience.
No immediate feedback. I guess the good thing is that you have job security for a little bit, for at least 3 to 4 years. Like, be like, hey, don't worry, it tastes like shit now, but wait, give me three more years.
Totally.
I designed it that way. It really takes a turn year four, trust me.
Right? And so you all were sourcing, obviously, from the beginning, from MGP, going down that path, but you decided that you wanted to make your own. And so talk about like working with Larry, like developing your own style or profile that you were kind of looking for your Maryland ride, put, say, your flag in the ground. This is us. What were y'all looking to do?
Yeah, we were, as you mentioned, it was one of these things where, you know, for us and our business plan and our approach, it just made sense that we worked with MGP. We had Larry, he had his connections and so forth there. We thought, let's get started with rye on day one, and not necessarily a clear spirit or anything. Not that that's wrong, but we just felt with the history of distilling in Maryland with rye, that was a great place for us to start. And then Larry had his connections at MGP, and we didn't necessarily want to start with a 95.5, just say there was obviously a lot of that on the market. We wanted to work with them also on something that would be a little bit different. And we really liked this idea working with Larry that we ended up going with two different mash bills. And so we did everything, instead of really even sourcing, we didn't ever buy anything aged. We submitted POs and everything was distilled to our POs. And so in hindsight, maybe we should have bought some with age and gotten out a little sooner, but like, well.
So were you submitting POs with 95.5 or was it your 95.5
and then one with a 51% rye. And so we always distilled basically two straight rye mash bills. And we've brought that in-house. We've tweaked it just a little bit. I mean, ever so slightly. But we love that idea. So every product that we have has a blend of those two straight ryes. And so as you know, with that 95.5, you get a lot of that big, bold rye spice that you kind of expect from almost 100% rye mash bill. And then that barely legal rye with a lot of corn and a little bit of malt in there gives it a really nice balance of like the fruity and floralnesses that we love and to kind of associate with some of the Maryland ryes, and a little bit more approachable, balanced, layered, yet can be have some complexities to it, which we like. So every product we have has a blend of two straight ryes. It's never just one mash bill in a bottle. And really working closely with Larry, understanding that we can have a lot of flexibility down the road on whether it's a limited time offering underneath our reserve series, or even like in our double oak, we'll change up the blend of the two straight ryes compared to our cask and our signature rye. So
are those 50-50 or... the traditional or the cask, and or you don't have to tell us, but maybe you want to. I don't know.
they're looking at each other like, oh no, what are we getting ourselves into this time?
Not at all. No, it's well, I'll let you speak to it. You're the one blending.
There we go. Tap dancing just started around here.
Yeah, no, it's like, well, on the cask and the signature, I always say for like every two basically of the high, we dump one of the low, and for the double oak, we dump more of the low, but still it's majority 95.5. It's over 50%, but not much.
Gotcha.
So Ryan, I'll ask you a question. Why do you think that distillers always go with 95.5? Why does it seem to be like that is like the magic ratio that people go with? If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's PLUS.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/bourbon. So Ryan, I'll ask you a question. Why do you think that distillers always go with 95.5? Why does it seem to be like that is like the magic ratio that people go with?
I don't know. I've tried to figure that out myself. And I think, you know, some of that is 95.5 is a tough one to cook and make from our standpoint. So rye has a lot of what we call beta glucans, which makes it real sticky and viscous once you start to cook that cooking process. And so I think when sometimes distillers are thinking, if I'm going to do this, I'm going all in. Like I'm going to be able to make this. I want it to be, they want those big, bold flavors, or they want to be able to, like, you know, punch you in the mouth with rye. And I think that that's where we found this balance of these two different mash bills to be able to say, hey, you know, and from our experience, we see that rye ages a little bit quicker or matures a little bit quicker and does not have some of those green notes that you see when you have corn in that mash bill. And so that allows us to have something that's moving along a little bit faster and then to kind of balance it out. And so, you know, what Brian was saying is a lot of times we're doing that blend to a flavor profile. You know, we're shooting for somewhere in that 80 to 90% high rye and then the rest on that low rye side. But it's part of our process of tasting, of evaluating the spirit, of going through and doing our sensory on it and saying, this is what we like out of it, you know, and that's what we believe is that Maryland style rye is, you know, you've tasted those Pennsylvania ryes or those Empire ryes that are really kind of heavy spice. And ours is a lot more subtle, a little bit more balanced. And I think that corn component and that blending of those two straight rye mash bills helps to build that flavor profile. So,
yeah, and one of the things I think we also learned about earlier is when you're taking us through the grain room and stuff, like that 5% of malted barley isn't really much for flavor.
No, it's not. It's an enzyme. It's to help chomp up those big kind of complex carbohydrates into digestible sugars for the yeast. We have played around with some other malts and trying to get different flavors out of it and upping that malt character. And we've got some fun little R&D projects that we've got going with that. But yeah, for our main mash bills, we use 5% of that malted barley, and it is just to help with the enzymes.
So when you're bringing it in-house and you're going from someone contract distillation, you know, to your specs, are you trying to recreate what they're making for you, or are you trying to make like your own like version of it that's resemblance, but it's not like exact? Or talk about how you want to think about that transitioning from someone contract to yours. Distillation.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, when Larry was kind of coaching us through this, it was kind of like, these are best practices. This is how I would recommend that you start things up. But then he's just like, once I'm out of here, you can change things. You can,
you're a distiller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Burn it to the ground if you want.
But we knew that there, you know, there's a reason that they do it this way. There's a reason that these are chosen mash bills. And so we tried to emulate a lot of that. We got the same yeast strain. We were dealing with some of the same grain brokers to help start that. But, you know, we have a different microflora here. We have different, you know, bacteria that grow around here that are going to change and alter those flavors. And we, you know, use a lot smaller batches than MGP does. And I think you see that. And I think you guys saw that today as we tasted through some of these, those small changes. Like there's still those, you know, recognizable 95.5 spices and flavor profiles, but there's so much else going on with our system and with what we've got going in here in Baltimore. So
kind of talk about that evolution as well, because you are contract distilling at MGP. You have plans to build a distillery here. You had the original still. And then at some point, did you laugh at it and go, what the hell are we thinking? Like we can't keep up with demand, or we can't figure out like this is a toy now. Like we've got to really amp it up. Like what was that process of thinking, like, how do we go to that next level?
These things take so long to
Or is that like going to Kevin and go like, buddy, we're going to need some more money.
No.
If you really want to be serious, yeah, we need some more money.
And that's the thing, is this is a very much a real business with real goals and real expectations and real outcomes. And, you know, we just learned a lot, as I've mentioned, obviously not being from the industry, just really learned a lot as quickly as possible and just thought, how much do you want to really make someday down the road? And what exactly do you want to make? And then you back out of it. And then we ended up basically here where we are now. And as time goes on, you kept hearing when I was starting this out about craft distiller after craft distiller building and then turning around, shutting down and upping capacity constantly. And so we were just fortunate enough as time went on, you know, this location we're at today is, which I love and feel very thankful for, this is about our fifth location. So as you bounce around and and time goes on, you're just like,
this hurts
yeah, and I'm ready to get going. And you kind of like,
whether you move a mile or 1,000 miles, moving sucks.
It's brutal. And so by the time we got this location and everything approved, we're like, all right, we're only going to do this once now. Let's up the capacity. And so so from day one, we were lucky enough to drop that 40-foot 24-inch column still in. And then we have the 250-gallon pot still batch system for some smaller projects, which is great as well. So we have a few tools to work with, if you will.
So Wild Rye whiskey only. Now we know Maryland's heritage and all that, but you have a still. You can do a lot of things. Wild Rye whiskey, no bourbon, no, you know, American whiskey.
We've only been at it for, this is year five. And so, you know, we don't have a master distiller. We don't think we've mastered anything. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We don't want to claim anything. Like, we kind of want to make one thing for a long time and try and get really, really great at it. And just that pursuit of excellence and just saying, like, it was, you know, Maryland did make rye whiskey. Maryland was known for great rye whiskey. And rye whiskey is an amazing whiskey. And in some ways, we think it's the original American whiskey. And so we're laser focused on that. We get worried about trying to do too many things at once and then never really perfecting anything. And so it's, you know, we've got a long road ahead of us. This is year five of hopefully 100 plus year business, you know, that will be here long after me. And I think we just want to stay laser focused on quality and learn as much as possible and turn out what is really hopefully be one of the best rye whiskeys on the market. And so we're just now getting to the point where our product will start going into the bottle. So it's kind of baby steps.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that kind of intrigued me a little bit earlier when we were talking, you were mentioning how you had a notable recognition in a local article or was another national article and the word Under Armour was never mentioned. You're like, we got here like under our own, you know, guys and our own will. It wasn't, you know, just because we're backed by Under Armour. Like, what does it mean to you to try to help maybe, I don't want to say remove that stigma because it still is very much connected to it, but you know, you want to kind of also make a name for yourself too.
Absolutely. And we're not owned by Under Armour. I want to make that clear.
Okay. Sorry. Not owned. We'll say there's some money that kind of flown in from different places.
So obviously, again, just Kevin being an entrepreneur. And I think, you know, in the beginning, and I don't blame outlets and media and so forth, probably heard, oh, here's somebody starting a whiskey company, MGP. Yeah, I think I know how this is going to finish. And hopefully with you guys' visit today, you can kind of, you know, realize that this is...
Yeah, this is a serious business. It's not just a hobby.
Yeah, this is not a hobby. And we're taking this incredibly serious. And like I said, we have real goals and real expectations of our outcome. You know, that's incredibly important to us. And that we have an amazing team of people here. And it takes a team. Again, that's kind of why we don't have a master distiller. I think everybody brings value. Everybody plays an incredibly important role. If you walked around today, if you noticed the door said teammates only or whatever, everybody plays a role. And I just want to see the team get the credit for that. And understandably, and so I think when writers put things out there, there's certain words that Google will pick up a lot faster than Brian Tracy.
I mean, there's somebody
that's sexier to me.
There's somebody that sold a company that used to go do, you know, Grand Canyon travel. I mean, that's big news too.
Yeah.
That zero does.
Yeah. My mom, maybe, but I don't know. So, you know, every article in the beginning was written and started a certain way with certain names and certain buzzwords. And now we're starting to see articles that just say, you know, Sagamore Spirit and talk about just the team and the products and what we're doing. And we're like, it's working. We're getting somewhere, you know, and that's incredibly important to us. And I joke around, like, we're not owned by an R, and, you know, they're a publicly traded company that's into sports and health and fitness. And we're a privately owned company. And
exact that's, opposite.
Yeah, kind of. And so it's just like they definitely, the Heisman's probably appropriate for us. They give us the Heisman, but it works.
Right.
So after being here today, it's been a fantastic day. One of the more impressive facilities I've been to. But one thing that I've like come away with is, and you talked about earlier, is hospitality. And everybody here has been so personable and welcoming. And I don't think it's just because it's a, you know, we're here, but where does that come from? Is that like, what is your vision for this company? Aside from whiskey as the CEO, what are you trying to empower your people with?
I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we're not Sagamore Spirits. We're Sagamore Spirit. We think this is something that's bigger. There's a reason we put our distillery in the middle of the city. There's a reason we're working with local farmers. I think there's more than just making whiskey here. And I think it's incredibly important that we give back to the communities and that we don't just park our distillery in the middle of a community and take. And so like we're laser focused on making sure that we're part of this community. We give back. we're welcomed by the community. The community is welcome here anytime to hang out on our lawns, you know, sit on the waterfront, use our Wi-Fi. You know, people don't have to come here to do a tour or spend money. They could just sit in the Adirondack chairs and enjoy the view.
Like, don't go to Starbucks. Like, yeah. Come here. Get come a drink of whiskey and the Wi-Fi and you're good, right?
Yeah. Dude,
that's, God damn, that's a good tagline. Whiskey and Wi-Fi.
Whiskey might be onto something there. And it's just, I think hospitality is incredibly important. I mean, there's a lot of competition out there and a lot of good brands, but what separates you, there's some small little differences at the end of the day will separate you. And I think the people here is a big part of that. I think our people are absolutely incredible. And I think that will be something that defines us and separates us from a lot of brands is that hospitality, that experience that we can provide you and that we try to give back and try and be part of something. And, you know, it took a lot to just get the distillery operational. So we're just now kind of getting our sea legs underneath us. And like now we can actually get out in the community and be part of it. And, you know, I know every distillery did it last year, but one of the big things is, you know, working with over 11 different hospitals and 150 different organizations and making hand sanitizer here last year and working with the team at Johns Hopkins to help them out. And that felt good. And we just want to do more and more things like that. And at the end of the day, you know, we always end it kind of a little bit. It's whiskey. Have fun with it in a responsible manner.
Just like a CEO.
Yeah. It's just, but it is. It's this is bigger than just whiskey. And this is a great city we live in. And we chose to put our distillery in the middle of Baltimore for a reason and not out by our farm, Sagamore Farm, because we want people to have one more reason to come discover the great things here and realize that there's that show that I've actually never watched, but apparently is quite popular, is not necessarily the way Baltimore is.
The Wire. The Wire. Let's go ahead and put it out there so yeah. Anybody that wants to watch it.
But yeah, right, you know, here, it's not like The Wire. It's much nicer.
You know, you had mentioned earlier, they only make one product. They actually make a few different products because they've got all their finished products as well. And I mean, that's what, so we actually poured a little bit of the cognac finish before we started here, which was honestly one of our favorites.
Holy cow. You know, usually when you're finished in something, it's like, okay, what are you up to? And we went through your
all. What are you trying to hide?
Yeah.
That's what we usually say.
Exactly. And my gosh, this cognac finish might be one of the better finished barrel products I've ever had. And like, no joke. Not just because you're sitting here and you're taking and you're taking me a dinner. And
it didn't hurt. But yeah.
No. So what was it about, you know, going down the finishing path, you know, because obviously you have MGP and you're trying to differentiate yourself, but you know, what about these particular barrels work with your product?
I'll let you jump in after I'll take a swing at it. And then once I chop it up, well, I go back a little bit too. A lot of the Maryland distilleries were known for rectifying, right? And even back then, whether they were putting different types of juices in it and things like that. And we certainly don't want to do that anymore, but it's kind of our spin on a little bit of the rectifiers that were here in Maryland and Baltimore before that, you know, kind of imparted different flavors upon their whiskey, whether it was they needed to try and cover up the wasn't as aged as well as it should have been coming out of Prohibition. That's certainly not what we were trying to do. Most of the whiskey before going into the barrels, at least 4 or 5 years old. But we also just think that, you know, rye whiskey is incredibly versatile and there's just a great way to showcase it, whether it's in cocktails or barrel finishes and the different types of barrel finishes, whether it's a fortified wine or a beer barrel or anything along those lines or a tequila barrel, whatever it may be. And it's just fun to learn. It's just really fun to learn, but they seem to complement each other quite well. And I always tell these guys, it's a great thing we don't sell tomatoes. When in doubt, just put it back on the rack and wait longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, if not, you know, usually time will help.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you know, from our standpoint, you know, we're very transparent about what we do. We are very genuine in what we do. And hopefully you guys have seen that today as far as our transparency. We're not hiding anything. And so one of the ways we knew as it takes a while to age whiskey and to get to that point, one way that we could kind of put our fingerprint on things and try to play a little bit with what we knew was already a really fantastic base whiskey was to do these agings, to do these different finishing barrels. And we've built up an incredible sensory team and have a lot of great palates that help us to decide and talk about. And we deal with different barrel brokers to see what's out in the market. And part of that is a very strategic plan. And there's a lot of sitting around talking, tasting sessions to say, we really think this would be fantastic. We know that like these are the flavors and the profile we get from our whiskey and we all knew we really liked cognac, and we liked some of these other spirits that we've done this with. And we knew that, or we hoped, it's always you never know with certainty, but it's a hope, and it's a calculated risk that we took. And a lot of times we've been very fortunate that it's paid off.
Yeah. And they're very popular, right? I mean, I think you were saying they were all just, they go fast.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And we do a lot of what we call distiller exclusives, where we do one or two barrels of it. And sometimes those will lead to a larger, national or regional release. But a lot of times it's one or two barrels and sold only out of the distillery during an event or something like that. And sometimes we've had those where they've been gone in a day or even pre-ordered and gone before we've even put them on the shelves. So that's been fun. And hopefully some of those will then come to fruition and see their way into a regional or even a national release.
Yeah. Brian actually had mentioned on the car ride over here, we were going to the warehouse first, is that since you all are located on the port here with inside of Baltimore, that you have access pretty quickly. If some barrels are coming over from Spain or wherever, you can just go pop your heads in, pop the bungs out.
Just leave them here.
And start sniffing through them and say, yeah, we'll pick that one, that one, that one. So that's a pretty unique aspect to it. Another question I have for you is, since you had mentioned barrel brokers, and there's a lot of them out there, and brokers are coming from all the different kinds of angles, do you have any kind of horror stories of messing with a barrel broker? No names, but just kind of like, what's the story behind it?
No real horror stories, but we've definitely run into a lack of transparency with a lot of the barrel brokers out there, or as you go down and start that conversation, you're trying to find out what was in this barrel before, what was in the barrel before that was in the barrel, and there isn't that transparency. And to your point, we are very fortunate that, like, being on the port and on the coast, is we are able to, not just take their word for it, because that could be dangerous, but to be able to drive 3 hours and sniff. And we've definitely gone up there and been sold a bill of goods and hey, these are fantastic. They're barrels that have held this for this long. And you get up there and they look way too new to be 30-year-old barrels, and you start smelling them, it's like, that smells kind of like vinegar. And
like, these are not rusted at all.
No, totally. And we've walked away from barrels because of that. But that's part of establishing ourselves as distillers and hoping to get our name out there, so that when we deal with these brokers, they know we're for real. And we want to go out there and we want to find the best barrels, and we want to be as transparent with what we're putting in and taking out of them with our consumers as we can. So,
yeah, kind of like one of the final subjects I want to kind of hit on right now is kind of like bringing us all together, because we're all kind of, or should I say, we are partnered with you all on Pursuit United, which we're super excited about, because I'll let Ryan kind of tell a little bit of the story about how we kind of got hooked up with you, because it was just all fortuitous.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I was telling Brian on the car ride here, this is where I wish I had the boom mic, all day. We've had so many great stories, fun time hanging out. But anyways, we had just wrapped up our Pursuit United blend with, Barstone Bourbon Company is a pivotal part of that. And so I thought, why not try a rye whiskey? And Barstone Bourbon had a great 2 or 3 year old 95.5 rye, but I wanted something from either New York or Maryland or something that paid homage to the rye whiskey. And Susie, who we work with, was like, why don't you give Sagamore a call, And I was like, and she's like, have you ever tried their stuff? And I was like, no, but I had met this guy, Tim, in Dallas at a Dallas Bourbon Club event, and I have his email and number. I'm going to email him right now. So I emailed him, and then he hooked me up with Brian. I think within a day or two, we're on a conference call. I had this vision, telling him our vision, and he was excited about it, sent us some samples of their own distillate.
I think he was a little hesitant. He was like, wait a minute, is this competing? Is this competing with us?
Yeah.
Who are these guys?
Yeah. There was some convincing, and some selling. I'm trying to give the fast version. But no, they sent us their products, and their 95.5, and it's 52, 51, somewhere in there. 52. Low 50s. And
low 50s. That's what we're all going to say from now on.
As soon as I opened the bottles and nosed them, and he had sent their cash strength, the MGP stuff. And I had it next to them, and immediately when I nosed it, I was like, holy cow, there's something here. And then tasted them, and their distillate is so clean. It's got this bright grapefruit notes and brown sugar and butter. And I was just like, immediately, Kenny knows when I find something, I get excited about it. I'm like, I'm telling
his
him.
His neck hair stand
up. Oh, I'm like,
then this I get a phone call. And
I'm like, this Sagamore stuff's like no joke. They are the real deal. And so we were super excited. I'd let Brian know that we really enjoyed the product and we wanted to partner with them, and they took some convincing, and now we got to negotiate how many barrels and what we can all have access to. But we're so excited to offer Pursuit United Rye with Sagamore, and both mash bills being a key component in that blend.
That is funny because we're really excited too. And thank you very much for those kind words. But I'd forgotten a little bit. I was a little hesitant at first. I'm like, how does this work? Who are you?
Yeah.
Are you competing against us?
Wait, you're going to take our product and put it in a different bottle? Wait a
minute. And then it was just like, I don't need more competition out there. It's pretty thick already. You know? It's like, and then
we're like, wait a minute, we're going to pay you to advertise your product.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to buy your whiskey and promote it for you. So, and they're like, okay, that makes sense.
Well, really kind of only came back with one thing. It was like, yeah, we think we could do it in the spring, summer, whatever. It's like, wait a second. We won't have released our own yet. Let us, give us a few months. We'll quickly push something out and then you can go.
Yes. We wanted to be first, but we'll wait.
We'll okay. We're okay with that.
We're happy to oblige.
No, we're excited. And we think it's many years of working with you guys ahead of us. So we're super stoked on that.
Yeah, us too. And I'm excited just for everyone to get to try and taste your products and come here and visit. It's one of the more unique experiences we've been a part of. And one of the better days we've had, you know, being in the whiskey industry, there's days you spend at places and you'll remember. And today is one of those days that I will. It's just been a great overall experience with everything. You can tell it's just been well thought out, so much passion behind it. And it's just, I'm super excited for y'all's future
and especially
in our future together.
Yeah. And especially if you're in the Baltimore area. I mean, I think this is something that, and if you're in DC area, like come out and visit, like, come and do yoga on Wednesdays in the waterfront or whatever day it is.
Cocktail yoga.
Cocktail yoga time. I mean, it really is. It's a great facility, great area. It's something that I think we kind of take for granted. It's just like, you know, in Louisville, you can't swing a dead cat with it in 10 distilleries. And you just kind of, you're like, okay, watch out. There's tours just everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And it's like here, it's a little bit more.
It's on a harbor. It's unique.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much different, and it's not overrun with 10,000 people that are trying to get into the gift shop to get a bottle of something, right? Granted, I'm sure you want that, but you know, I'm just saying.
one day.
I'm just saying there is that more like relaxing feel to it, which I truly enjoy too.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that hospitality part of just, again, we just want people to come back, always feel welcome. Just don't want them to be, well, I've been there, I'm done. It should be welcoming all the time and should be unique experiences going on all the time and a reason to come back because we, you know, especially in the last year, you can't really rely on tourism right now. And so being just part of Baltimore and the surrounding areas and offering some great experiences for the folks around us here that have been very, very supportive of us since day one. And we wouldn't be here without them. So it starts there in your backyard and then we'll come down to Kentucky one day.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
In the meantime, we'll make the quick flight here and pop in anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today. And Brian and Ryan, this is really going to be hard to put all these names together. But,
yeah.
But Brian and Ryan, thank you again for coming on. If people want to know more about Sagamore, how they follow you, social media, and you too in general, if you have places where people can follow you all, let people know.
Yeah, the main thing is sagamorespirit.com. If you want to just go there and sign up to become a whiskey thief, you know, they're the ones who find out about the special releases first, or any unique events, things along those lines. And then of course, any social media would be at Sagamore Spirit, like Instagram and Facebook. And then I also have an Instagram, Sagamore Whiskey Brian or Sagamore Brian. Sagamore Whiskey Brian.
Sounds like you use that a lot.
Yeah, right. It's not heavily followed. We're working on that. Yeah. I need to be better about promoting it.
What about you, Ryan?
So I have an Instagram handle. It's Smiles Davis Jr. And yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Let's see. Panic plus a jazz guy too at the same time.
Right.
Is what it is. Right. Love it. Well, thank you guys once again for coming on. Make sure you follow them, you know, on all the handles. Make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as TikTok. And as well as make sure if you're listening to this, make sure you're subscribed as well. But with that, cheers, everybody. And we'll see you all next week.